Welcome to the React Show. As new technology emerges in your technical stack, it's important to not only learn them in theory, but to find practical ways to implement the knowledge you're learning as well. You could either spend your time making another to-do list or tic-tac-toe implementation, or you could dive into a rapidly expanding e-commerce market with the new Shopify Hydrogen Framework, which is built upon upcoming React 18 features like React Server Components. You were born a social animal in a world that was meant to be less measured, less exact. And now you sit with dancing photons blasting away your eyes as your muscles atrophy and your social skills lapse. In a world where everything is measured and exact, you emerge from your cave that you call an office to find yourself torn away by the currents of the journey. Of the journey we are all bound together in. Whether you're just learning to write code, or you're a 50-year expert that knows APL just as well as TypeScript, we're all on the same journey together. So join us on the React Show as we explore how to make better programs, better teams, better companies, and a better world together. The React Show is a weekly podcast brought to you from occupied Miwok and Powhatan territory, focused on learning more about React, programming in general, and the intersection of programming and the rest of the world. Come, join us on this journey. Thank you for joining us on episode 42. You know, here at Owl Creek, we're big on good design and a solid user experience. And one of the things I love in good design is just those times when you can really delight the user. In this case, what I'm thinking of isn't really in software per se, but Austin was telling me this morning about a cool way to get your day started on a chilly morning. So what's up with that, Austin? You got a good story for us?
Yeah, so getting out of bed is pretty tough in the morning sometimes when it's so warm and snuggly. And when I came downstairs, it was a little nippy. And we got a new washer and dryer by the Speed Queen brand this week. And when I was doing my clothes last night, I noticed there was like a steam refresh option on the dryer. And I was like, ooh, I'm gonna throw my hoodie, my sweatshirt, my sweatpants in there real quick this morning. And so I steam refreshed them for about 15 minutes and I put them on, and it was just like, oh, it was just amazing having like this brand newly dried, like warm, fuzzy clothes feeling you get after drying your clothes. But like with this little feature, the steam refresh, you can just do that pretty much anytime, not just when you need to wash and dry your clothes, right?
That is awesome. And I think it's so awesome just because, like, from a product perspective, I mean, it's awesome to have that like nice warm feeling, of course, but in my like product brain here, I'm like, oh, that's so cool, because like, I'm sure that's not what that feature was designed for. But it's not like they force you to like go through the normal cycle to be able to use it or something. So you're able to reuse this feature to other things and add some extra delight to your life. And I think it's so cool when products do that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I never thought that I would make using my dryer part of my like daily routine, but now I'm like convinced, like, hey, maybe I'm gonna do this multiple times a day, like in the morning. Then like during the middle of the day, maybe I need a nap, I'll throw my blankie in there. And then maybe right before bed, I'll throw my pajamas, even though I don't wear pajamas to bed. But, you know, like a dryer has now become maybe like a core staple to like what keeps me going every day.
Yeah, we're with Owl Creek, an organization focused on React and React education and utilizing dryers for great new opportunities. Yeah, so this is pretty exciting. I say like we're focused on React and React education, but I've always focused on, you know, product and making the product more than just the sum of its parts, you know? And I think this is a great example of that. So anyways, yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed that story. When Austin told me that, I was like, yeah, we got to talk about this. So like always, I'm your host, Thomas, with my amazing co-host, Austin. Hey, Austin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me back. The last two episodes, I was kind of down and out, and I missed you guys, and I'm really excited to listen to the two episodes on preventing startup burnout that we just released with you and Brian, and I hope everyone else enjoyed it too.
Yeah, we absolutely missed having you on there, and it is great to have you back. I'm so happy. And yeah, we had a fun time recording those episodes, and I thought there was a lot of really great, not just even startup related advice Brian had, but just like experiences and feedback on like technical startups in general. So yeah, if you guys are interested in that, that's the last couple episodes. And yeah, like always, you know, if you have feedback or questions, you know, feel free to email us at thereactshow@owlcreek.studio. And yeah, so I guess moving forward, Austin, after our previous episode on React server components, I think we all wanted to like learn a little bit more about it, like in a more practical sense, right? And so I heard you dug into a new framework by Shopify called Shopify Hydrogen that actually leverages React server components. Could you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, so the episode we did on React server components, like the whole time we were going through and like digging into it, I felt like it was still like kind of a nebulous concept. I couldn't really like see the like, okay, what am I gonna do with this? Like, how does this impact what I do? And I think this happens a lot to developers in general as new features come out. In order to remain hireable or like to remain ahead of the hiring curve, we're constantly having to learn like new software, new things that come out in the ecosystem. For example, React server components. So it's good to learn these things in theory, sure, but like finding a way to like practically implement it has been advice that I think we've touched on in multiple episodes where we're talking about like, okay, so you're trying to learn something, make something for yourself, or like you're trying to be more hireable as a, or get into freelancing, etc. Yeah, make something. If someone asks me like how to do anything, it's always come down to like using what you know to actually make something practical. And there's the phrase practice makes perfect, right? And so I think that's like what kind of spawned this episode today. Is we learned about these server components, and then I'm like, okay, like we joked about in the intro, like, okay, we could like, how am I gonna just make like a to-do list or a tic-tac-toe or something with this, or like coming up with some idea of like, how am I going to play around with these features? And then it's like, oh hey, Shopify has made this Hydrogen framework, and it leverages that, and it's got a lot of other cool things in it. So we'll be going into e-commerce today in general to like talk about why not only like learning this framework will be good for getting some hands-on experience with these new features, but also like focusing on something that could be not only practical, but maybe like a career enhancing opportunity to dig into. But before we get into all of the stuff with Shopify Hydrogen, Thomas, I was wondering if you had, I know we've talked in the past about projects you've worked on, like to learn things in a practical sense, but I was wondering if you could tell us about some of the things that you've worked on with React, like to better learn React, like projects that you've made for yourself that are like very React specific.
Oh yeah. So actually the approach I take is I have a couple different programs that I have been writing and rewriting for maybe 20 years now. One of them is a stock market game that I originally created in high school to play with my family. And it was originally written in Visual Basic. And I have rewritten it and remade it in, I don't know, Java and C and, you know, everything in between since, you know, I started this. And when I went to learn React, of course, that was where I started. I was like, okay, let me see what this looks like in React. And so I started there, and it was, you know, it's interesting because like React is different than, it's kind of different, but kind of similar to, in some ways, it's to a lot of the stuff I've done, like React components, like a component system is how I've been building, you know, GUI apps for ages. But the, you know, functional reactive programming sort of style was new to me. So it was really interesting to see how that fit in. I don't know. Did you want me to talk about any specifics of this, or you just want the story?
maybe go in a little bit about like, okay, there was like where everyone loves aha moments for ourselves, or when we hear about someone else's aha moment. Did you have like, especially when you transitioned into using React for this application, did you have any like, oh, this like really enhanced the experience with what I've built, or I hope it hasn't gone in a backwards direction since you wrote it in Visual Basic, right?
That's such a fascinating question. I'll start out by saying in some ways it has absolutely gone backwards. But not necessarily in a bad way. I think, you know, when you're comparing it to like Visual Basic or Qt or something like that, that I've written it in before, those are desktop applications and it's not really a client server architecture. And so I think that changes it a lot. So while I say it goes backwards, I think a lot of it is just due to the fact that it's on the web, you know, and the web is tough to develop for relative to a desktop application. But I think this ties in really well to what we're talking about here, because React is part of what React is about is making that less difficult. Part of the difficulty with web programming is, you know, keeping our internal state in sync with the DOM, right? And obviously that's what React is here to help us do. And so from that perspective, you know, I was absolutely like, oh, wow, this is awesome. Like this does, you know, provide a paradigm to make that easier. You know, I have a lot of issues with the design and stuff, but like, you know, I think compared to how we made web apps, you know, prior to React type frameworks, it's better in most cases. Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting topic. I think we've touched on this before in JavaScript in general. I feel like we're like reinventing the wheel a lot with this language and what comes with it. And I don't have any specific examples, but it's like we're always like rediscovering the past and bringing it into the future in this interesting ecosystem we're a part of. But switching back a little bit to where we were going. So like, it's all about creating practical use cases for what you're learning. And like Thomas just shared, like he's used this one application to learn a variety of languages. And I think that's really cool because especially when you just focus on like one thing and you iterate on that one thing and continue to improve it, you really get like a depth that you don't get if you just jump around a lot. But maybe today after this talk you'll look at the Hydrogen framework with Shopify as something you want to go in deep, because the reason I went with this framework deep dive is, sure, we have the React server components, but also because like ultimately, I know Thomas, you just do software development mainly for fun. You don't even have to worry about the money coming in from it, right? But unfortunately, or I mean, it's just the way it is. A lot of what we do is directly tied to like, okay, like, am I going to be able to build like some sort of financial security, like pursuing this? And the reality is, especially since COVID hit however many years ago it is now, the global e-commerce market has really begun to accelerate, and everything is really, I mean, everything's been going online for a while now, but we just like entered a new phase where really online adoption is like everywhere. Everyone's trying to figure out how to, like, a lot of people got used to working from home that aren't typically working from home like we as software developers can do every day. And so there's a lot of new interest coming into the market. And like, for example, mobile e-commerce in general in the last, like, in the last years has been over like a $3 to $5 trillion market. And it's forecasted to grow at like a 25% compounding annual rate, at least until 2024. But I mean, who knows with how things are going, it's probably going to continue to increase even more. And so we're talking about e-commerce in general. And a lot of people, when you think about e-commerce, a lot of people that get into it start with Shopify, because it's a pretty well-known name. And it's quite big. It's pretty wild. There's over 1.75 merchants, one Shopify. There's like, they're powering over 20% of all e-commerce sites on the web. Then that was in 2020. So I'm sure it's only increased in the last 2 years. And the revenue and profit is pretty nuts in general, for like what Shopify has generated. Like in 2020, they had generated over, here it says 2,900 million, in revenue, which is just it's an 86% increase in revenue from the 2019 numbers. So it's like definitely drastically going up. There's a ton of statistics on like the growth that shows that Shopify is like something that you can get behind and, kind of know that it will take you somewhere. But before we really get into I don't want to ever evangelize anything that we're like not agreed on behind. And I know that Thomas and I both share a story with a current contract that we have where Shopify was not the answer. And I was wondering if you could dig in a little deeper on how Shopify failed in this certain implementation instance without going too deep into the details, I guess.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So to me, Shopify, I can see it, you know, makes sense as something to start with because they make it easy to get in and start doing things, right? I would say in my experience, the biggest disconnect between what their software offers and what, I think if you're like just, you know, a regular person and you like, I don't know, are selling t-shirts from your house or something, Shopify probably works great. But if you start growing and you might have multiple like fulfillment locations and you actually have like a team in your warehouse and, you know, you have a larger operation, their APIs and I think their overall design is just not made for that. It's made for a much simpler setup. And so like one of the cases we ran into, in fact, that this company is still dealing with is the fact that on Shopify, they basically treat your inventory as available for sale inventory. They don't have a separate concept of like your physical inventory. So the way that it normally works, like let's say you have a warehouse, you have 10 items in your warehouse, right? Somebody on the internet places an order for one of those items. Shopify is going to say, now you have 9 items. And that makes sense to an extent, right? Because now you can't like sell more on your website than you actually have. But this is confusing if you're somebody that works in the warehouse because you might need to know how many actual physical items you have on hand. Maybe you have to move inventory around, maybe you move it to a different location, maybe you need to store it in two different places because you have 10,000 of some item, you know? So knowing physical inventory and where it lives in your warehouse is very important. And you can, you know, maybe run some other software to help with that, but not being integrated with Shopify itself, it really starts creating a lot of issues once your e-commerce, you know, business starts to grow, I believe. Like, you could definitely still do it on Shopify, but it definitely has limitations in that regard.
Yeah, I appreciate your insights on that because I know that I didn't really understand the full context of why we were moving off of Shopify. And after we've discussed this and gotten a lot further down the development pipeline with the e-commerce brand we're working with, it becomes pretty clear that, yeah, eventually you will outgrow it if you're trying to make a complex shopping experience built on Shopify. And but like you said, I think it's a really great place to start. And also another thing I wanted to bring up, like I said, we're not trying to evangelize anything or like put our support behind anything. We're trying to paint a clear picture before we say, hey, go dig into Shopify. It's like, go get it. It's the way to go. I found a really interesting thread on Twitter by a user. His name's Ryan Breslow, the Ryan King. He built two companies, Bolt and Eco, and he claims to be fixing company culture at conscious.org and spreading dance through themovement.org. And he's all about sharing his learnings. And one of his learnings he shared was in a thread called Shopify is Eating Their Ecosystem. He goes on and talks about how, like, hey, it's a behemoth. It's really accessible for independent merchants. And it's pretty cool what they can do out of the box by providing an end-to-end commerce platform. His story goes back to 2009, where Shopify introduced their own app store, where they created like a developer program where people could come in and begin developing apps for the Shopify ecosystem. It was a thriving community. Shopify really benefited from it. And it really created what Shopify is today, being a $80 billion valued company. And so they have a partners program, Shopify Partners, and this is part of this app store program. So Ryan goes on to say, like, there was a decision that had to be made at a certain point of growth, either prioritizing openness and committing to community empowerment or replicating these apps in the app store as their own products, selling them and driving direct revenue. And he claims, like most companies usually do, they make a public commitment to being open, to like serving the community, to this and that, and it all sounds really good. And usually something else is going on behind the scenes. And over the last, I mean, since 2009, really, their main approach behind the scenes has really been seeming to clone the most profitable apps, and which either puts the partners that they've cultivated and have helped cultivate their brand out of business or putting them at a disadvantage. So they've been kind of like using their app store apparently as a research and development engine to create a lot of these core Shopify features. For example, Ryan claims that a lot of the following things came directly out of like previous implementations in the Shopify App Store. Like they've come out with their shipping, capital, arrive, order tracking, fraud protection, email marketing, fulfillment stuff, things for subscription, point of service, that's what POS stands for, right? I think it also stands for something else, right? But
are you saying it refers to something in this case?
Maybe.
I mean, you're making it sound that way.
Maybe. I just really want to make sure that, like, before we get into it, people are aware that, like, I mean, it kind of ties back to our conversation on dependencies in general with, like, within your application, right? You be careful about what dependencies you bring in to your development.
Is hydrogen, what is it licensed under?
That's a good question.
Because I absolutely agree. I, you know, like we had that conversation kind of about Facebook and React itself, you know, I certainly am not a fan of Facebook, but, you know, the software is open source. And while they are sort of running it, you know, if things go wrong, you can still fork it and have a new community around it. You know, is that possible with what we're talking about here?
Well, if you look under the GitHub repo, it says permission is hereby granted free of charge, blah, 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 to deal in the software without restriction, no limitation of use, rights to use, copy, modify, blah, 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 and to sell copies.
What's the license?
It doesn't necessarily say what it is.
Oh, MIT.
Oh, yes, I see it at the top.
Yeah. So yeah, that it would be similar to React then.
Okay, so does that make you feel good?
Yeah, so from a, you know, this is again where, like, I think Austin's right. It's important to be aware of the larger picture. And even if something's open source, the larger picture is still relevant in terms of where the product is going and what they could do if you're using it. But I also take solace in at least the fact that technically we can take advantage of the technology regardless.
Right, and... like, I think the main thing we were just talking about is, like, just be careful about anything. Know, and maybe have, like, a back door ready to jump out. Have a parachute on just in case. I think that's good advice across the board. But in general, we'll post a link to that thread on Twitter so you can kind of get some insights of a Shopify app store developer. They built a whole business around it. And I mean, I think it worked out for them in the long run, but it also created some long-term difficulties for them as well. But that being said, it all comes back to this Shopify partner program where you can, like, work with them, which will allow you can, like, build and migrate stores. So it allows you to, like, interact with the ecosystem outside of Shopify and work, like, in tandem with Shopify. So you could, like, migrate stores from other e-commerce platforms to Shopify and, like, use Shopify as your, like, your agency's e-commerce provider. You can create apps or directly become an affiliate even with Shopify. But where this really goes is, like, they have a pretty good Shopify developer program where they have a lot of cool things to offer. I know GraphQL isn't necessarily a new thing, but it's newer and it has definitely solidified itself as something that people are going forward with using it. And it's like a skill to go after.
We really need an episode on that, don't we? Because, do I have some things to say. But let's keep going.
No, I would love to chat about that in general because, like, I have not yet... I've used GraphQL in a few applications. What was that first... like, when Facebook first came out with all of this, there was, like, some way that they used... there was some library they created to allow you to connect with GraphQL on the front end. Do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, I don't know. It was like, it was before Apollo or any of these other frameworks came out. And it was like a super nightmare to use this. Like I really didn't enjoy it at all. But after I figured out how to use it after a while, it became a little bit more pleasing. What do you not like about GraphQL?
I think what I don't like about it more is not necessarily the technology, but the way it gets evangelized. Because to me, when you need to, like, the way I think of it is, I have a client and a server, and I need to fetch data from the server from my client, or push data to the server, right? The problems that GraphQL tries to solve, you know, one simple one is that you're not sending data or receiving data you don't care about in a request. You can easily scope the data that gets sent and received. So you're not sending, you know, like with a regular REST API, you know, you fetch product information, you send the entire product and tons of data, and you might only need one bit of it. With GraphQL, you don't have that. But that's like almost never the bottleneck in a client server program I've worked on. It's not the transmission time to send extra data. It's the backend time required to fetch that data. And with GraphQL, theoretically, you could like build a system where you're also not fetching data you don't need. But at some point, you're sort of blurring the lines between writing your querying code on the front end instead of on the back end. And I think if you're exposing an API like that where that's possible, I mean, you're creating a really, really dangerous situation where A, security-wise, people can maybe find stuff you didn't want them to find, but also B, performance-wise, you're not spending the time to make sure that these queries are written in a logical, performant way. Instead, you're relying on these front-end developers who might not know the back-end or the database structure to create all of this. And so I think, like, as a technology, it's not really bad, but just the way it gets thrown around, like, yeah, we support GraphQL, you should just use GraphQL. Like, sure, but, like, what are you really gonna gain from it, you know?
Well, that is definitely really, really interesting thought on it. I hadn't approached, and it makes complete sense. So it's pretty much you're like, oh yeah, you're not really solving a problem. You're covering it up and making things seem like it's better. I do think that in general, the concept of trying to get just what you need to show a presentation is good, but like you're saying, it might not be done in the right place. And I think maybe the reason why people aren't developing REST APIs to be that specific is just like creating that specificity in a REST API is often like, it's like, oh, that's too tied to a use case or something. It's not general enough. And I think that paradigm is not too existent in server-side thought, well, right?
Yeah, I think what you run into is a lot of back-end frameworks, like, say, Ruby on Rails, that are really popular for building REST APIs. They're designed in this sort of ORM fashion, object relational models. So the whole idea as a backend developer is you're thinking about objects, essentially. And so you're thinking, hey, I need a REST API to return this object. And that makes sense in some cases. But a lot of web applications want to have more than just an object. Like, they might need that object and its relation to other objects and the data associated with that. And it's sort of kind of makes your REST API not as resty, you know? And that's why I won't be somebody fully supporting pure REST either. Like, I think an API needs to serve the clients, and rigidly putting yourself into GraphQL or REST or even something for a specific client library like Hydrogen is dangerous and can lead to, you know, not ideal code.
Well, it's a good thing that Shopify offers both REST and GraphQL, but it doesn't seem like that really solves the problem. Or maybe they have with what they do offer via those the endpoints that they provide. One of the next things that Shopify has available for its developers is called the App Bridge, which I think is kind of like where the genesis of this kind of Hydrogen thing began working. It allows you to like embed your app directly within Shopify's admin or POS system and customize Shopify UI elements outside of your app. So you can kind of like say you have your own like custom e-commerce thing or a custom web app or something. You can more directly integrate Shopify directly into it with a more seamless look and feel, perhaps.
Is that using Hydrogen or is that just completely different?
This is like proto Hydrogen, I believe, which this kind of led. So there are like React components that are available via this app bridge. And then out of this, they began to create what is called the Polaris kind of framework, which is more, it's more of a design system to help you like build out like a standardized look and feel
It just like a component library or just like designs?
It started out as just like a design paradigm, like Material UI did perhaps with Google. Yep. And then there have been actual components that have been developed out of it. And it is all directly within, it's via Shopify/Polaris, the library. And it's all based around React, where you can have stuff for like forms, images, feedback, navigation, overlays, etc. So I think this was like the genesis of like them building out this. Because remember, we talked about like the App Store in 2009. For Shopify, I'm sure like these are kind of like developer utilities that have come out as we've gone along.
Yeah, it looks to me like a lot of it is sort of higher level than you might see in MUI components or Chakra UI or these other ones.
Yeah, and they're like, very.
What's that?
They're very specific to Shopify, where it's like you don't seem to have too much granular control, but it's like you can access their core functionality.
It reminds me of the new, like, doesn't Chakra UI have like new like premium components or whatever that are like e-commerce focused?
Yeah, they just, so Chakra UI, they have like application components, they have marketing components, and now they've also released like a e-commerce component.
So it's like coming at it from two different angles to me. It almost looks like Shopify started with making these higher level e-commerce components, and now they're like, oh, it's a whole component system, whereas other normal, more standard component libraries are starting with the basics and building them into these larger components.
Yeah, I believe so. And so like another thing that's come out of the developer labs at Shopify is another way that's not really related to Hydrogen, but I wanted to bring it up because it's kind of cool. Another way, if you're like, hey, I like UI work, I like theming and styling, they have a framework called Liquid. It's a templating language. Written in Ruby that allows you to actually create storefront templates for Shopify specifically, not custom ones necessarily for like a custom application, but actually like themes that load in the Shopify website. So there is like another creative and or revenue stream just through this Liquid framework, and they even provide some existing themes that you can kind of just like fork off of, which is pretty cool. And all of these developer tools or developer features offered by Shopify Dev has led to the current genesis of everything, which is creating like really customized storefronts with this Shopify Hydrogen framework. So that's where we're going to transition into, like, we've talked enough about Shopify, what's in the ecosystem, what's maybe good and bad. And now we're going to dive like directly into hydrogen.
Ooh, I'm excited. Sign me up.
Yeah, well, it's pretty brand new for me. I just really got interested in it because I follow a lot of people on Twitter who, like, there's this side of Twitter that they proclaim that's called money Twitter, where these people are like, so I just like reached like 100,000 month over month revenue, and like here's like blah blah blah, and like all there's a lot of people in e-commerce on Twitter, and I just was like reading a lot about it. And then as we got into this React server components, this hydrogen thing popped up, and I was like, oh, that pretty cool overlap there. And so hydrogen, what is it exactly? Like I said, it allows you to build completely custom storefronts via this front-end web development framework. And it includes all of the structure for structuring your application, the components to visualize what you need, and all of the tooling you need to get started. So you can just kind of focus on styling and designing features to make your own brand. So a lot of the queries for like creating, like getting your products, getting collections of products, et cetera, these are all kind of available for you in the starter kit. So you can really rapidly begin to build your custom web front.
What if, I wanted to use Hydrogen, but not with Shopify.
I don't believe that it works. That, I mean, technically, you probably could use it, but I don't think it's really makes sense to use it, even though they have added, like, for example, one of the things when we touched on with Next.js, one of the things we liked, or I know you didn't like, was the routing system being just like, hey, it's based on these, like this page's folder structure. They've done things like that. They've taken into account like handling environment variables, doing SEO. They have stuff for like caching built in. So it is it's like a front end framework, but unless you're building a e-commerce platform, I don't really see the point in using it.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Like, it doesn't make sense to use Hydrogen regardless of whether or not Shopify is backing it. And so I see in the dev docs that you can actually have custom data sources, and it's just a matter of transforming the data from your data source to what their components are expecting.
Yeah. Yeah, so sure thing, you could use it. You might have to do some custom stuff, but it's like maybe it would be better to look at like what Hydrogen is built upon, so that you can, instead of using them as a framework, perhaps you could like create maybe something more custom for yourself. So there's like the main components seem to be, I had never heard of it until now. Until I looked into Hydrogen, it's called Vite. It's spelled V-I-T-E. You can access it at vitejs.dev. It's a build tool for React that aims to provide a faster and leaner development experience for modern web projects. So I know that we've talked in the past about getting started with React. We like started with Webpack dev servers and configuring these Webpack files and stuff. And I think that Vite is kind of like what's been building on top of this. So the main features that Vite claims to provide are a faster development server, which allows for like some richer feature enhancements over your typical ES native modules. Like it talks about like pre-bundling speeds. It talks about how it uses hot module replacement differently, out-of-the-box TypeScript support. And you can even, it's not just for React, it's you can also do Vue with it. So, I mean, I'm not super, oh, wow, this is amazing. It seems like what other things are doing, just maybe with a different spin, and maybe it is better. And it also uses this library rollup on the bundling side. Do you have any experience specifically with rollup, Thomas?
Yeah, very minimal, but tiny bit, yeah.
Yeah, not enough.
I mean, this stuff seems, I guess, like somewhat interesting. It's the way, you know, hydrogen gets built. But I guess it's probably not super relevant to like the, I mean, I guess it's relevant to the experience, but like in terms of like how specific React components are used or whatever, all of these tools are going to give you the same end result more or less, right?
Right. Well, it seems that the main things that Shopify really leverages from it is sure this development environment, and then they also talk about how server-side rendering is one of the main components built into this, and they talk about with Shopify Hydrogen how they use server-side rendering and hydration and client component code transformations from Vite, and they also like in tandem are using these React server components with them. So I wanted to go over again a little bit about the server components and just talk about what they do, just to kind of recap. So like they allow some of your components to render on the server and some of them to render in the browser, or like have like using server-side rendering to do it all on the server in an effective way. And the way to like define a server versus a client side component is just with a file syntax where you do .server.jsx or .client.jsx. And if it's shared, you can just do .jsx. And the reason like why you would want to use React server components and the specific benefits that the Hydrogen framework believes that they gain from it is server-side only code is generated that has like no impact on the bundle size, and it reduces the bundle size in general for your application. Then one of the main things that seems to be interesting with this is we all know that data that resides on the server is like you're not exposing like your data sources on the server. Like whatever's happening on the server like stays on the server. And so you can maybe do some more intimate or more private data sourcing on the server, have that rendered into the component, and then plop in the component into your front end. So it's a little bit, you're really truly only displaying, you're not doing any transformations client side. Also they say that it provides a seamless and well-defined protocol for server and client components, whatever that means. They claim that the way that server components work provides a better, like it provides a streamed rendering experience and a more like progressive hydration style. And then server and client code sharing where appropriate. So whatever all these things specifically mean to like the Hydrogen framework, it sounds like you get some pretty cool benefits from relying on these server components. Does this make sense to you, what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, even looking at the docs here, it says that Hydrogen is really like designed around React server components. And the way that they're describing it here is really, I think, kind of fascinating in terms of the evolution of web development. Because what they're basically saying here is you have your components and they're not necessarily all shipping with the initial page load, right? That's, I think, the streaming part of it is. So you have what you need for your initial page load, and then maybe you click a button or go somewhere else in the app, and it might stream in, you know, what code you need to run the next component. So, I mean, it's kind of fascinating because I feel like we're like going full circle again, you know, because, you know, 20, 25 years ago, we built websites with web pages, right? And links. And the server generates everything on it, the server, and sends some client data. You see the web page, right? But you're not sending the entire website when somebody loads your one web page. And it essentially is streaming in the information the user needs as they click through your app. It feels like that's kind of where this is taking us back to, except instead of dividing things up by page, it's divided up by component.
Yes, it's pretty interesting, the granularity, because components can be entire pages or they can just be like a single blob of text depending on what you need. So it seems it's pretty cool that you can do to that level of granularity the rendering on the server.
Yeah, I would be super interested in learning about the algorithm that like decides what should, like, okay, maybe there's not even an algorithm. Is this all based on what we as developers decide should be streamed in? Or is there something that's like, you know, like, let's say you had a larger component and it's made up of a bunch of like text components. You know, should I stream in each of those like text components one at a time, or should I stream in the larger component? Is this like a decision we are making when we're using Hydrogen, or is Hydrogen just taking our components and intelligently figuring out how that works?
Well, something that I started looking at when I was reading through how Shopify Hydrogen works with these server components is they use GraphQL queries, use shop query, and use query that allows you to, like, well, use shop query allows you to make server only GraphQL queries to the storefront API, which to me sounds like a little bit in the direction of what you're mentioning with trying to like get data properly from the server, but with GraphQL.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I notice in the docs, it's like you can have, if you have a shared component, then like, I guess what it is shared components just end in .jsx, but client only components have to be .client.jsx, you know, and server ones have to be server.jsx. So I'm like, okay, so these are shared components. So that means it might be streamed in, but like, do I need to worry about, you know, really nested components all being shared components and it streaming them in really unintelligently or whatever, you know?
I'm sure that it is very intelligent, you know.
I'm just not convinced, but
trust the React developers, right?
Yeah, let's go with that.
Well, something, yeah, I mean, I think it's, they literally in the docs, they write that it's in alpha over and over again. So I'm sure that as the listeners, if they decide to go with Hydrogen, they'll discover some of these road bumps or potholes along the way. And we would love to hear any experiences. I'm actually working with a close friend of mine. She owns a med spa, and we're like setting up a web store soon so that she can do all of her purchases, do all of her sales through this. And I was like, oh, maybe it would be an interesting use case to do this hydrogen framework on for now. And I've begun building that out. So I'll have hopefully some more information for you very soon.
That sounds good. I have another question. How, which maybe you don't know the answer to, but I wonder, like a lot of our components depend on state, right? So if I have some state in my browser, you know, the user clicked a button and I had used state and I updated some state, how does the server component know about that?
Well, as I was this is exactly what I was going to transition to next. When I was reading through the documents, there is actually what they call a server-side state. And they expose a hook within a React hook called use server state. Which is quite interesting to me. So you can, it's titled Accessing Hydrogen Components from Client Components.
Ooh.
So there's this entire use server state concept, right? Where it allows components to paginate within collections, programmatically switch routes, or do anything that requires new data from the server. So say you have like an update to the page state on the client side. The server will then receive the page state, return the new state to the client, and hydrate and render the state into the DOM. So it seems that primarily the state is always shared to the server side, regardless of whether it's just client side state or not. Not 100% sure on that.
This is really turning me off to server side components and all this. This seems complicated. Like, this seems like another thing you have to manage. And think about it this way too. Some state is just not appropriate or reasonable to be sending to the server. Like maybe it's some sort of animation or something, and I'm sure there might be better ways to do this, but like something where the state is updating a lot or whatever, like you don't want to be like send 10,000 requests to the server or whatever. So then you're like, oh, I need to like batch up my, like it just sounds like a, like now you gotta be like, oh, okay, this state should only live on the client. And then somebody on the server side, you know, is writing their component and they think the state is available to them on the server. And then they run it and then it fails in production. And I don't know, it sounds like a mess.
Yeah, it does. That's where I have concerns in general about everything that's being developed and being created. And then like, we're just kind of, as developers, we're kind of like left to like, hey, either learn this stuff and learn how to use it, or like we'll hire someone else that like already does and knows how to do it. So it's like, I find that a lot of what happens with like the stuff we're required to learn to, quote, stay ahead of the hiring curve, we're kind of forced into it or forced out of it.
Can I talk about that? That
yeah,
staying
I would
ahead
love.
Of the hiring curve. I agree with what you're saying. It's frustrating. The approach that I have taken is sort of different. I didn't learn React right when React came out. In fact, I waited years and years. But I was able to learn it in, I mean, a matter like a week, basically, you know? And the reason is I spent a lot of time learning the fundamental concepts that drive software. And so I have spent years doing that. And so learning a new framework, like learning React, was easy for me because I'm like, oh, it's made up of this concept and this concept and this concept, and it combines them in this way. I just move forward, you know? So my sort of take on this is like, it might make sense to learn this new framework for understanding this underlying technology, but I would also recommend not looking at that specifically to stay ahead of the hiring curve. I think long term, you're going to be way better off if you spend time learning fundamental concepts. And so that means, you know, you're learning maybe some things that seem old, you know, like for example, APL or K or J, you know, programming languages that nobody really uses generally today. You know, you learn that, you'll learn concepts that actually are relevant, you know, maybe not the whole language, but I think what I see a lot of people do is they just learn this new thing that's coming out and they have a very fragmented understanding of programming concepts in general. If you really want to have a solid foundation to be able to jump on any new technology really quickly, my recommendation is to spend time not just in web, but like spend time in learning, you know, fundamental computer science, you know, concepts on your own, not like getting the data structures and algorithms book per se, but like, you know, for example, if you learn Lisp, you know, part of why I was able to just jump into React is because I learned Smalltalk and Lisp and these concepts, you know, a lot of them were like, oh yeah, I know exactly what that is. I just hop right in. So while I think it can be useful for your career to learn things like this, if you really want to know my opinion, I recommend you invest in yourself and spend time learning things that might not pay off right away, but teach you the fundamental concepts. And so you don't have to relearn, you don't have to learn stuff ever when something new comes out. All you need to learn is the new names or whatever, you know?
So it's more like by focusing on these quote older concepts, you're focusing on the cultivation of meta knowledge that allows you to then like plug into any new concepts and have like a deeper understanding of their operations on a fundamental level?
Yeah, sort of. Although I think it's even simpler than that. I don't think there are new concepts almost ever in computers anymore. People think this is new and exciting, but it's in my experience, I'm like, oh, we've been through this twice now in my lifetime and I haven't even been doing this all that long, you know? Like I'm learning, the more I learn about what we've done in the past, the more I understand we're not really doing anything new. We're just maybe combining it in new ways or something, but the concepts itself aren't new, you know?
Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah, nothing is new under the sun. It's all just something with a new twist on it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there could be something actually new, but like if you already know all the other concepts, it's much easier to learn new concepts too, because it's probably derived, like even if we have a new thing, it's probably derived from something that's old, you know? And so you're like, oh, this is just an evolution of this concept. Okay, I'll plug right into it, you know?
Yeah, I agree, and I like that that concept. And we were talking, we had a team meeting the other day, and they were like, if you could have any superpower, like instantaneous knowledge in anything, what would it be? And I was like, I would like to have instantaneous knowledge on like the underpinning paradigms of learning all things. And it was like, I think that's the ultimate cheat code, right? Because then you could just be like, I want to learn how to fly. And it's like, well, currently it's not possible, but you have the master key to learning anything. So it makes it more possible.
So you would have the ability to pick up hydrogen just like that. And tell everyone else about it.
Right. Which, I mean, I feel like I'm failing to do a little bit on this episode, but I mean, like I said, it's still, we're all learning and growing and trying to implement new things. And this is my attempt to create or begin creating the bridge to that knowledge about hydrogen. Because I personally, like, I think that, I mean, I started up, I did the Getting Started guide, which is kind of a good transition point to where we're at now, is like getting it set up and started wasn't really any more difficult than doing any create new React app or something. There was kind of some pain, maybe like 10 minutes of pain getting my development partner account with Shopify set up and like making sure I had like the storefront access token and the API scope set up properly, etc. But the starter application that they built for you is already like I could start selling snowboards for $600 a pop right now, and it's actually linked to a store. So it's pretty cool what you can do, and the environment isn't really any more different than your typical React application you've worked in, other than these. There are clearly, I see a lot of these server components, and I see a lot of these client components. Most of the client components do seem to be actually under the component folder for like buttons or carts, etc., like that. Whereas you can look at like collections or products or other pages, and these all seem to be more server. So it seems that a paradigm like this paradigm kind of focuses around like, okay, you want your page components or container components to be server components that leverage client components or shared components. That seems to be at least with the example they have, right?
That's so funny though. Don't you remember what I was just talking about? How we used to have pages and
right.
You're basically saying, is that?
Yep. We're back back to the 90s and
oh yep. God, I love it. Oh, I love it. Oh,
but we can so do funny. It in React now, Thomas. Come on.
I mean, there is value in that because that is a pain point of React, but it's just hilarious. Like I find this really funny. But yeah, that makes more sense to me, and that's really interesting.
Nothing new under the sun, right?
Yeah.
but like I was saying, it looks pretty easy to set up to get going. They do recommend before you get going that you know a little bit about React, which I hope most of us here do. Know a little bit about this Vite thing, which I don't know. When I look at these tools and tooling frameworks, I'm like, I don't really know if I care to learn about it. Like, as long as it like just hopefully it's running and I can just forget about it.
Yeah, I think I agree with you in a sense. Like, I always want to understand everything I'm working with. But with these like tooling systems in JavaScript, it's like they're A, so, so complex. And B, it seems like there's a new one we're supposed to use every 2 years anyways.
Right.
So it's just really frustrating. Like, we need to get together as a JavaScript community and be like, all right, let's develop a protocol that just defines how to do these things. And then people can build their programs to that or something. Like, I am done with this like process.
Yeah. I just remember like when before Create React App or whatever, how much time, like when I was learning React and like following a tutorial, it was like the only tutorial you'll ever need to get a React application. Like the first 3 out of the 5 pages of the tutorial were the Webpack config mm-hmm. setup. Dude, like that was pain, like, because you just like spend all this time up front, can't even get the app, like the Hello World yeah. running, and you're like 10 hours in maybe tinkering with all these optimizations, and then you're like, oh, I'm out of gas on this idea. Like,
oh yeah,
it was fun.
So you know what I think is interesting? I think this ties into the software development lifecycle that you and I talk about a lot, which is bottom-up programming. That like Webpack hell you're talking about is sort of the first step, right? Like, you get it functioning, it's ugly. The next step is, oh, let's combine stuff with scripts. You know, let's automate this, or let's, you know, that's the next step. I feel like we haven't taken the third step, which is design. Like, okay, we understand all of this now. Let's come up with a good design, and let's design a system that is like clean and accomplishes our goals. Instead, we're just like stuck on the second step and everybody just keeps doing it over and over again, you know?
Yep. Yep. That's maybe we'll come up with that protocol. We're still early in Owl Creek days.
next week.
next week.
No, I mean, it's also probably not something, it's one of those things too, that probably there's just, you know, I think this is great. So Shopify exists as a framework because Shopify is a company and they have the money to pour into it. You know, without somebody like Facebook basically donating, you know, to an endeavor like this, it's probably just not a fun thing for people to do in their spare time, you know, like for free. Like,
oh no, there's some weird people out there that really need to go outside.
Well, I do like to do a lot of programming outside. Is that what you mean?
Well, in a way.
But anyways.
There's only one little, so like we talked about React, knowing this feet thing or Vite, and why maybe you shouldn't really dig too far under the hood on that one. And then the third thing that Hydrogen leverages is the Tailwind CSS library, which isn't really anything super new. But the fact that they chose Tailwind as the baseline framework makes me want to visit it a little. I know we in the past have talked about Chakra UI and how much we like that. And Thomas, as I believe you're telling me, it's actually built upon the Tailwind framework. I was wondering if you could go into that a little and then your experiences with Tailwind.
Yeah, I don't know if it's, I can't remember if it's built upon it or just uses the same.
Modeled after.
Yeah, I'm not sure which of those two it is off the top of my head. But yeah, I mean, Tailwind is a nice looking theme. That's how I see Tailwind from a React or component standpoint. You know, Tailwind, I think, was more revolutionary in the way you used it to construct traditional like styling for things, which you can use in React components, but I don't for various reasons. I just think Tailwind looks nice and it composes well together, and so it gets used in these libraries a lot. I'm happy, no issues there.
All right. Well, yeah, that pretty much wraps up what you need to know about like getting started. And if you want to get started with Hydrogen, like I mentioned, like setting up, like being able to develop using a Shopify store, you actually have to set that up before, which require there's information on how to do that in the getting started docs, and setting up your tokens, etc. And then once you get those up, you just start the dev server and there's a lot you can do. And they'll walk you through how to like make like customizations like in any tutorial or getting started documentation. But as you go through, they actually begin to show you a little bit about how to fetch data from the server components, making GraphQL changes, etc., and then like building out more custom product pages, working with the components they have, which, like I said, I mean, I think it's really good practical knowledge for getting your feet wet or your hands dirty or whatever, with React server components, because they're like deeply using server and client components in everything. So I think it's a really good opportunity to get used to the paradigm or see some ideas of how it's actually done. And something that I was reading too, upcoming is with Hydrogen, they're coming out with a global hosting solution for Hydrogen storefronts called Oxygen. And that will be coming out in 2022, sometime this year. So making custom e-commerce storefronts with Hydrogen by Shopify ultimately seems like a pretty good practical implementation of learning maybe some newer paradigms around how React Server components work, getting some experience with Vite. And if you haven't checked out Tailwind before, you'll get like a pretty good overview of how some of these things are created. And so like we said before, like maybe this isn't like keeping ahead of the hiring curve. It's not the most practical way by like really getting intimate with this like new feature knowledge. Maybe it's better to dig into some fundamentals, but however you prefer, we now have like a way that you can dig into some of these new features. Is there anything else you wanted to touch upon, Thomas?
I mean, yeah, I'll just follow that up and say, I mean, this is probably the more practical way to get ahead of the hiring curve, to be honest. It's just not going to be as quick or sustainable in the long term. So,
right, it's a trend.
Yeah, and that definitely can pay off to be a part of a trend. The other thing I just was having thoughts of when you were saying the end of this is just that I don't want to end up in a world where every development company is just building their own React framework for their own company, you know? Like, I hope that's not the direction we're going, you know? I hope they take this and say, you know, in a year and they're like, hey, we're making this generic and you can use it with these other ones. I know that's not going to happen, but like sort of the, I don't know. I don't love that part of it, but I guess it is what it is. And I agree with you. And just to sort of conclude, I really actually do think it makes sense if you want to understand the server React server components better. This does look like a great place for this because it is so deeply integrated and it's easy to get set up and running like you described. Like I might even give that a shot just because I'm curious to see how they work, you know? So yeah, I think that's a really great bit of advice there.
Yeah, right on. Well, thanks for being agreeable with me for once.
Once per episode, I have a marker here, you know, to make sure I don't forget. But
what's the ratio? The ratio doesn't matter. It's as long as you do one.
Yeah, just once.
You can destroy me as much as you. Well, that's fine. No, it's fair. Well, yeah, that about wraps up everything we wanted to chat about. We had a user reach out to us about React Server components last time, and it's really great hearing feedback, so we're glad to bring you a little bit more insight from it from a different perspective with this Hydrogen framework, and we really hope that more of you reach out. We're starting to get a little bit more active on Twitter, where you can just find us at twitter.com/Owl Creek Studio, trying to get a little bit more engaged with the community there. And we also have a Discord if you want to hop into that channel. No one's joined us yet, but maybe that'll change after this. You can go to owlcreek.studio/discord, and you can always reach us at the React Show at owlcreek.studio via email. Anything else you want to wrap up with, Thomas, or are we good for the day?
Oh, I have many other things, you know. Unlimited stream, but no, I think we're good for the day. Yeah. I'll save them all for when we're off recording, you know. I'll just tell you everything at once.
Unload.
Just unload. Yeah, no, we're good. No, this is a lot of fun. I really enjoyed this episode, and I feel like I understand the React server components in practice a lot better, which I was really curious about. So yeah, no, everything sounds good to me.
Well, I'm going to be working with that storefront that I told you about with for one of my clients, and I'll keep, hopefully next episode, regardless of what it is or in the future here, I'll be able to elaborate a little bit more on what I've done. So yeah, thanks everyone for showing up today, and y'all have a good one.
Bye.